Jack and I are on this program together, and Jack and I are very different people. Sometimes the things that Jack does is really hard for me to work with. It's especially hard when I don't want to look at the impact of his life on me. I'd rather change him so that he does it the way I want it, rather than me use the situation to grow up.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a teacher at McKenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. By training, Jack is a philosopher, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced for over 20 years in California and Oregon. Along with her husband, Larry, she is employed by the Caris Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Christianity at Work in Relationships, Jack and Christine discuss how God teaches us to trust Him through the experiences of everyday life. Here now are Jack and Christine.
So when I walked down here into the studio today, Tucker said to me, "Christine, are you having a bad morning?" And the answer is, yes, I am. I'm having a really bad morning. I just found out that I overdrew on both of my bank accounts, and that's kind of the state I'm in right now. So, Jack, watch out.
Okay.
In the last several weeks, we've been defining biblical concepts, trying to kind of give a foundation to people of how to look at and understand the Bible by having defined these terms and making things hopefully more clear. And I would encourage you guys to get tapes. If you come across a word that you don't quite get, like propitiation or atonement or sanctification, we've done a whole series on those, and I think it might be really helpful to you in order to get kind of a basic understanding of lots of biblical concepts. I think it was pretty thorough, pretty good. But today we're going to go back into a new series, actually a continuation of an old series. Christianity at Work in Relationships is what we're going to call it. It's quite a day to begin Christianity at Work in Relationships, since I feel really feisty, Jack. And I thought that I would start it out this way. I thought that we should talk about our relationship, since this is the most appropriate relationship that's in the context of our work today.
Okay.
So how's it been for you to work with me? Be honest, Jack.
Well, I just give you whatever you want, and it goes very smoothly.
Oh, no. Actually, you are pretty easy to work with, because that's kind of what you do a lot. You don't have a lot of opinion on how we should make things happen in this program. You're pretty willing to kind of go with the flow.
Yeah, I mean, we are very different and have different perspectives and a different outlook on a bunch of things, but as long as we don't both insist on having it our way all the time, then the relationship can go fine.
No, Jack, as long as you don't insist on having it your way all the time, it can go my way and we're good along.
Yeah, that works too.
Actually, I think that you do probably not have a strong opinion on how things go logistically.
That's true.
And I have a stronger opinion, and so that kind of works out pretty well for us. But is there anything about me that just kind of bugs you? You have to work through? Come on, let's make it juicy for these people. Let's make it real.
I can't think of anything in the context of our, particularly in the context of our show. I don't know you outside this context all that well.
Jack, you're not giving us any interesting information. In fact,
I'm
sure that Tucker, the man who puts together this program, has just taken the whole space out of the time that Jack was thinking. But he paused for quite a long time trying to think about any issues that we have in the context of this show. And Jack still couldn't come up with anything. And you know what? I would like to conclude that I am not a sinner.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
That I'm pretty perfect, and it's just really easy to live with me. The problem is, I know it's not easy to live with me. And so you're just kind of missing something.
Well, I guess that's the... I guess I have worked in my life at not being bugged by people. And it just seems to me that that is really a key to human relationships, is there's kind of an art to being flexible and to not letting differences between you and other people become a source of contempt for them or disdain for them, recognizing that other people just have their own style and have their own perspective, have their own weaknesses, yeah, that there are weaknesses in other people. But the way you phrased the question was, is there anything about me that bugs you? And from my experience, especially when I was young, I'd find the silliest little things to get bugged by. You know, the way somebody would hold their head, or the way they would, you know, the way they would carry themselves, just their posture and so on. And I found myself just contemptuous of people for the silliest, bizarre little reason. And it just struck me every time that happened, is why on earth would that be a reason to hold somebody in contempt? And just over the years, I've tried to practice and tried to believe and tried to live my life in the light of the fact that people are different, they are broken, they are weak, they are fallible, they make mistakes, and I can either hate them for it and hold them in contempt for it, or I can just patiently let them be, essentially. Let them be who they are.
So if I'm hearing you right, you've come a long way. You used to be very bugged by people.
Yeah, I mean, as a young person, I mean, I look at the things that I was contemptible toward, and I'm just shocked at how irrational and evil and silly it was.
It seems petty as you think about it now.
Yeah.
So what did you
do? And that still comes back, you know, if I'm tired and kind of just generally grumpy and grouchy, then somebody will do something and I'll get this flash of being bugged by it. But usually it's because it inconveniences me somehow, or because it has some kind of impact on me that my selfishness reacts to, then I'll get bugged by somebody.
Yeah, I think that's really it. We get bugged by things because it imposes on something that we want, something that's important to us, and so we make the other person the problem rather than work with whatever is bugging us. I think I gave a great example of that story right before we started this program, and I'll say it again, but I'll change it a little bit. Is that all right?
Okay, yeah, please do.
Okay. So the other day, it was Saturday, and I was wanting to get a whole lot of stuff done, and I was home just with my 10-year-old daughter, and the dog, of course, as I'm trying to get out the door, needs to get out, have a little bit of a run, is a little bit rambunctious because he hasn't been out for a while. My sons haven't been home to give him a walk, so I think, okay, I'll put everything down, and what I'll do is I'll take the dog out for 20 minutes, and that will solve it for the rest of the day, at least in part. So I'm trying to be real patient. Go take the dog out, take him for a little run, feeling like a real good dog owner. Bring the dog back in. He was very muddy by the time we got back in, so I had to hose him off, and then I had to dry him. He's a big yellow lab. Big sloppy yellow lab. And sloppy yellow lab, and he gets hair everywhere. Anyway, I get him in, I go back, get myself fixed up, and I head out the front door, which is wide open. My daughter had gone out the door and left it wide open, and of course, my dog, who is a runaway dog, just takes off out the door every time it's open. So it's a big deal in our home. Keep the front door closed. So I was just beside myself. I couldn't believe it because I needed to go all around the neighborhood and call the dog, and I knew it was going to take like a half hour to find the dog because he has some unknown place that he goes to. Anyway, I walked down the driveway, and there's my neighbor with her dog, and she said, "Oh, lost your dog again." And I said, "Yep," and she goes, "Boy, dogs are really hard sometimes." And I said, "No, children are hard sometimes." So that's a little bit of a revised version of what I said to her. But I was
she
really,
wished you a good day.
Yeah, that's right. And she said, "Well, Christine, I hope you have a good day." And she took off. She just didn't. She usually is real friendly, but I was just so mad that she just ran. She was going to take a jog, and she just took off. Don't blame her. She probably thinks I'm She's right. Whatever she thinks, she's right. So anyway, that was an example of being inconvenienced. It got in my way. I wanted to go somewhere, needed to go somewhere, and the dog was in my way. And I wasn't even luckily, my daughter, I couldn't find when I ran out the door. She was in the house somewhere, couldn't hear me. And so she didn't get the same thing my neighbor did, you know, my total frustration. But had she been there, she definitely would have.
Children have been the biggest source of frustration for me. And there's something about children, we have a lot more invested in them and our relationship with them. So when they inconvenience us is a problem, but that can be true of anybody. But also when they just don't measure up somehow to what we want them to be, our hopes for them, our wishes for them, to whatever extent we are tempted to vicariously enjoy life through our children, if they're not doing it our way, then they're thwarting us. And it's another form of that inconvenience. When they thwart us in our plans, then we can get very angry and frustrated and contemptuous toward them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Jack. It seems like you were saying earlier that you've kind of gone from a place of being really bugged by people, and I was thinking, I wonder how far he's come with his own kids, because kids we're with all the time.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, we've got them, I don't know, at least 18 years, every single solitary day, except for the week or two of vacation or whatever we take, might take a week and be away from them. And it's just kind of a continual filing away of one's nerves after a while.
Right. Yeah, that's why children is such a test of our commitments, of our sanctification, of our maturity, of our character, for that very reason, because it's so steady, it's so there, it's so in your face, and they are so uncivilized. And, you know, the combination of those...
Uncivilized, you mean in the sense that they haven't been socialized yet to know how to act nice to their parents all the time, because that would just make their parents feel good.
And the thing is that they're always...
I'm being sarcastic.
I know.
Okay, well, I just want to make that clear.
They're always decent toward other people.
Usually they, always decent.
I mean, I shouldn't say always, but...
I want to tell you a story. I've got my stories today. Bear with me. The other day I had... a person that I work with come over and give me some information. And I'm talking to this person for a few minutes, and my daughter is really upset with me because I wasn't going to let her go to the beach with some friends that weekend unless she'd finished her spelling and her reading and cleaned up her room and put her clothes away. I had all those things, and she said, "Oh, Mom, if they come, you would not let me go." And I said, "Yeah, I would. I would not let you go. Just try it." And she was really mad. She wasn't going to try it, but she was really mad because she didn't want to do this work and it was no fun. So this person is talking to me, and she's met him maybe on an occasion or two. And she stands up and stands by us for a few minutes, and she goes, "You know what? My mom is a witch." Gee. She was mad, and it was her unsocialized way of getting back at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So what did I do? After the person left, I'd given her a popsicle. After the person left, I said, "Okay, go throw away your popsicle. You can't have that now." "I can't. We didn't mean it, Mom." "Well, it's not kind for you to talk that way about people. Even if I am a witch, you could find a different way, a nicer way to say it, or a different time. And it's okay if that person knows I'm a witch, if they also know other things about me from you. This is not okay." Anyway, totally unsocialized, really, really got under my skin.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to reserve their worst behavior for their family members and their parents in particular. And I think it's helpful for parents to keep that in mind, that there's a lot of venting that happens by children toward their parents, and we need to have the maturity and the stability to just kind of take it up to a certain point. I mean, we want them to learn to be decent people, but not allow their frustration to turn into our frustration. We have the maturity to absorb it, because that's what they're doing, is they're... the stress of their day, they're relaxing and they're just being their little sinful selves, and they haven't come to terms with the issues of sanctification yet in a mature kind of way. And I don't do anybody any good by just sinning back, you know, by just being angry back and nasty back to their nastiness.
Well, I think we need to talk about this further, and we're going to have a series on parenting. But, you know, I think people there's a lot of room for interpretation in what you're saying. I don't think you're saying that we should let our kids just go off on us, because that's not teaching them how to be respectful either. On the other hand, we need to absorb enough, be able to listen to it, take it in, hear it, so that they have a place to have this stuff inside of them emerge, but teach them how to do it in an appropriate way. So
okay.
There's a balance here, and we'll have to let's talk about that later. But I'm intrigued by something, Jack. How is it that you worked at being not bugged by other people? We're saying, yeah, you get bugged by your kids, but what do you do? What have you done over the years? It's probably not been a conscious process in terms of exactly how you do it. Sounds like it's been very conscious in terms of your goal. I don't want to be bugged by people.
Yeah, I think that's true. The process itself has not been particularly conscious. I think I had some pretty good models, and that was a pretty important thing in my life. My father is a very unperturbed kind of person, and you know, I saw his model most of my life. I mean, I will never forget this. We lived in California. We lived in San Jose, and my parents lived in Oregon. And they came down to visit us, and my father offered to rototill our front yard because we were just putting in a brand new lawn in this house that we had bought. And he was rototilling, and he was on a bit of a slope on the edge of the property, and the rototiller fell over, tripped him, and he came down with his hand on the exhaust.
Oh, my.
And I was out doing something in the yard, so I was nearby. And he said something to the effect, "Oh my goodness, that's hot." And not particularly raising his voice. You know, there was a little bit of urgency to his voice, but not anything too remarkable. Well, as it turns out, we finally persuaded him to go to the emergency room a little bit later, and he had some third-degree burns on parts of his hand.
Oh, my.
So it was a pretty serious burn.
Very.
And the most it got out of him was, "Whoa, that's hot."
Is that how he was throughout your childhood?
No, not throughout. I seem to remember that he got upset with us kids and frustrated with us kids. But for the most part, my bigger memory of him is being a very patient man who put up with a lot and just absorbed the frustrations of life and didn't react to them. So I had that model and that concept of what a person was supposed to do with the frustrations in life. I don't know where at first where other people and looking at other people. I know I was very struck by one passage in the scriptures when I began as a Bible student. I was studying the parable of the publican and the sinner in the temple, where Jesus talks about, or the Pharisee and the tax gatherer. The Pharisee prays to God, "God, I thank you that I am not like other men. I am I tithe twice a week, or I pray twice a week, I tithe all that I get," and so on and so on. And then the tax gatherer in the corner, not even able to raise his eyes to heaven, saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." And Jesus says, it's the latter who goes out of the temple justified. But Luke, what struck me the most about that parable is that Luke begins that parable by saying, "And Jesus told a parable to those," or about those, "who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt." And that "and treated others with contempt" for some reason just stood out like a neon light to me, because my whole early Christian experience had been one big contempt fest. I mean, I looked at what I perceived to be the purity of my life, what I interpreted to be the purity of my life. The sexual purity, the purity from drugs and alcohol, all the things that I didn't do that all of my peers were doing, and I took that as a real indication and real evidence of my inherent moral purity, which is to say my inherent moral superiority. And out of that moral superiority, I really was contemptuous. Some Christians really express that contempt. I don't think I so much expressed that contempt. I think I was probably pretty kind to people because that was part of my moral superiority and moral purity.
You're the good guy. You're the nice guy.
I was a good guy. I was a nice
guy, Jack.
Yeah. But I knew what kind of contemptuous feelings and attitudes were, you know, were really seething inside. Yeah. So that was a real significant observation that really caught me, and I realized I was in the Pharisee category, and the Pharisees are clearly among the bad guys in the New Testament. So Jack, you have some reevaluation to do here. You've got to figure this out. And I think I did. I mean, I think I made it a project for the next several years to figure out what makes a Pharisee, and what is it about this tax gatherer in the corner that he has it so right? You know, what's the virtue in what this man is and what he's doing that's so different from the Pharisee? And it's basically his self-knowledge, his awareness of his own unworthiness, which is something I had to learn, because I did not think of myself as unworthy.
You were the opposite. In fact, as you describe yourself, you were what the Bible often calls a Pharisee.
Right.
They're kind of the example of a self-righteous person who has seen themselves through the works that they do outwardly, and being able to look at those works and saying, those are good.
Right.
I do all those things really well. And for you, it was sexual purity. It was maybe being the nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was not being involved in drugs and alcohol, kind of in a culture that was rebellious,
right.
Outwardly.
Right.
But you weren't a person that was humbly looking at the reality of your own sin.
Yeah, not at all. No, not at all. Nor was I encouraged to do so. I mean, partly the theology that I was learning was reinforcing my self-righteousness because... you know, it was basically the theology was come to Jesus, be a morally superior person, and be blessed accordingly. That, you know, to sum it up. And so that just encouraged me in looking at my conforming to the Christian lifestyle and then patting myself on the back for doing so and expecting that God was smiling likewise. But where I'm going is that then became the key for understanding and relating to other people, because if you think of yourself as morally superior, you will be contemptuous toward other people. If you recognize that there but for the grace of God, I would have the same weaknesses that I'm confronting in another person, and in fact, I do have weaknesses. They may not be the same weaknesses, but I also have weaknesses. And what do I expect here? Do I want everybody in the world to hold me in contempt for my weaknesses, or do I want them to give me a break? Do I want them to give me room to be a fallible, broken sinner in need of the mercy of God and in need of growing up and becoming more mature and becoming a more righteous person? Well, I want them to give me a break. You know, I want them to understand that they shouldn't take this personally. I'm this bad to everybody. You know, I just am a jerk sometimes. I just am a coward sometimes. I just am what I am. As obnoxious as I am, in whatever ways I'm obnoxious, I am that to everybody. It's nothing personal. I treat everybody the same. It's deeply ingrained in me, and I don't even see it. You know, I'm not even aware when I'm being the thoughtless, obnoxious jerk that I am. And when I reflected on my own experience, you know, I came to recognize that's got to be the experience of everybody else as well. They don't know that they are being obnoxious when they're being obnoxious, or offensive when they're being offensive, or thoughtless when they're being thoughtless, or so on. That they're not setting out in a premeditated fashion to make my life less pleasant. They're just being who they are being. And at that point, I have a choice. I can either hold them in contempt for being who they are, or I can be merciful. I grant them the mercy that I want them to grant me. And it just all kind of fell together for me that's what the Bible's saying. That's what it's teaching me how it's teaching me to think about other people.
So the process that you're talking about, let me go over it. Is first, you started with a moral superiority, and really were contemptuous toward other people pretty significantly until you came across this verse, which maybe you don't know exactly when things happen, but certainly that was a pivotal piece of information in your life where Jesus was commending this tax gatherer who in the eyes of the city that he's in, of the people in the city he was in or in the culture he was in, would have thought he was a pretty bad guy. But Jesus said, this is a person who I delight in. Those aren't his words, but I think that's basically the idea.
He's justified in my eyes, yeah.
And so it's because he wasn't contemptuous of other people as the Pharisee was. He was humble. He saw himself as a sinner. So you were starting then to see yourself as a sinner, see your self-righteousness even perhaps as a sinful thing. The nice guy wasn't really so nice. The nice guy was just covering up the hatred that you had, the contempt, the resentment that you had toward other people. So when you discovered that, you started a process of wanting to, of seeing yourself as a sinner and wanting to extend mercy to other people who were sinners as you are. And that just has kind of worked itself out over time where because you want mercy from people, you also want to extend mercy toward other people. What's hard here is sometimes I might have a weakness in area of finances. You might not have a weakness in that area, so you could be contemptuous of me because, gosh, you're so great at that. You know how to keep the books. You keep things to the penny. It all always works out well, so what's wrong with you? And that's what really, part of it really breaks down, is when I'm good at something, like you won't believe, this is terrible. The other day, I was going to pay this kid who came to work for me, and I went into, I figured he had worked for me 7 hours, so, no, 8 hours, and I was thinking, okay, $7 times 8, I couldn't figure out what 7 times 8 is, so I ran into my house, and I said to my son, hey, Jesse, or I don't know which one, what's 7 times 8? Mom, you don't know what 7 times 8 is? If I said that to my math teacher, they'd send me back to kindergarten. I can't believe it. Well, I'm not going to live that 7 times 8 down for the rest of my life. It's terrible. But, you know, okay, I'll tell the whole world, just so it's out, I do not know my division. I can't even say it, my times tables anymore. I just don't know them. I know my fives. I'm pretty good at that. But ones, that's really great. Twos, I do pretty well. Up to 7 and 8, man, that's really a problem for me. Anyway, someone who does it really well can really look down on me and say, man, Christine, you really don't have it together. And it's true. I really don't. I really hate numbers. I even don't like telephone numbers and addresses. I have this, like, problem with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think that's kind of where we have a problem sometimes in being able to accept others because we don't see our weaknesses in the same light as we see other people's weaknesses. It's much easier to see theirs before we see our own.
Right, right.
Okay, I have a problem with your thing, though.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, Jack, I'm not sure you're going to want me to say this, so here we go. What you said earlier is that you don't have a problem with other people, but you do have a problem being bugged by your children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if, and I'm really kind of making a challenge here, if you have worked so hard at not letting the issues come up for you with other people, and they end up having their only outlet with children.
It's possible.
Or maybe with your wife. You haven't brought her in, but husbands and wives are usually pretty difficult relationships, even the really good ones, because we're with them all the time.
Yeah, it's possible, and I understand why you're asking that, because I think that's a pretty common problem for people to kind of screw themselves up into patient, decent, flexible behavior toward other people, but they resent the fact that they're doing that ultimately, and they take that energy of resentment and they take it into their family and take it out on their family.
They resent that, or maybe they just have all this stuff that's filling up in them,
yeah.
Of you know, they've been you know, triggered in a lot of ways, and there's just this pressure building up.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I don't think that's the case, because I think I have devoted the same. I'm committed to the same principles in relating to my family that I am other people. I do really work at understanding, letting them be their own people. The bigger problem for me is that, and this may be a problem, but I'm more invested in my children. It's more of a problem with my children even than it is my wife. I think my wife and I get along pretty well, but with my children, there's a kind of investment. I think, I'm not even sure if that's the right way to put it, but it's important to me how they behave, who they are, what values they adopt, and so on. And where I'm most frustrated is when I see my children being their own people.
You mean on one hand you're very invested in them being their own person, on the other hand...
No, I'm not invested in... I'm invested in them not being their own person.
You're invested in them...
Being the one I want them to be, the person that I want them to be.
Okay, so that you look or feel good.
Yeah, something. I don't know what it is. I mean, I want to say that I can experience life vicariously through them, but I'm not even sure that's true, because I'm plenty satisfied with living my own life. I don't know. But there's some kind of investment there that I'm not sure I can even put my finger on and analyze, but there's an investment there in them being someone that reflects me somehow.
Positively.
Yeah, thank you. Positively.
Absolutely.
And so when they begin to evidence their own independence and their own values, their own personal values that are different from mine, and values even that I don't particularly respect, then that's hard for me. And I get frustrated, and I want to get into a mode where I begin to control them or change them or shame them or manipulate them somehow to have different values. But I think I see that happening enough that I try to say, Jack, they don't belong to you, they belong to God. God's going to have to sort them out. It's not your job. They are their own person, their own creation by God. They don't reflect on you one way or the other, ultimately. You are just a caretaker. You are just a steward. You are just a manager of their education and their nurture. You need to let them go their own way. And I think I see that enough that I can, that after, with some struggle, I step back away from that and take a deep breath and say, okay. It's my knee-jerk reaction that is frustration, not the final outcome usually. Ultimately you'd have to ask them.
Okay, well, maybe we had to bring them down here into the studio and let them just kind of tell on you, Jack. I don't think I would do that because I have three of my own, and I don't think I want them in the studio. I already got one like report card the other day, so that was bad enough.
They issued a report card to you?
Yeah, like my daughter telling the person that I'm a witch. That was not a good report card for me.
A big W.
Big W. She did come back at the end of the weekend, and she said, Mom, I do take that back. You're not a witch, but, you know, it's out there. And she was angry, so I think sometimes she definitely does feel that way. What's really important in what you're saying, at least part of what's jumping out at me, Jack, is that you don't just gloss over the struggle that you're having to finally be accepting of your children as they are. That you're identifying, gee, I really do want them to be like me. It's a struggle that they're not doing things sometimes that reflect onto me in a positive way. When they reflect onto me in a negative way, or you perceive as negative, that's a struggle. It's important to identify struggles, otherwise you're going to end up like the Pharisee again.
Right.
And that's what's really important about identifying what's going on in our lives. If we're not aware of our struggles, our weaknesses, our sin, our resentments, our feelings that are kind of like a dashboard to what's going on inside of us, then we become self-righteous rather than people are humbled by the reality of who we are. And as we see that, who we are, the paradox is we see our sinfulness, then we can have a greater, possibly have a greater amount of mercy or grace toward other people because we're not different than them. So being aware of that struggle is very, very important. And that's part of what kind of concerned me with what you were saying in the beginning, is it looked like possibly you've glossed over the ways that you might be bugged by other people, that you have gotten to a point where you won't be able to see your own struggle because you've just learned how to not maybe be aware of things that maybe truly are important to you, and maybe lose out on some learning through the struggle of seeing that. And I think, really think that's a growing up process. When I see that I am very bugged, that's kind of our generic term today, by the behavior of somebody else, either I can blame them and get them to change, or see them as wrong, or be resentful or contemptuous of them, or I can turn it around and look at my contemptuousness, or look at my blaming, or look at my tendency to want to do those things, and say, okay, what is going on inside of me that I would need to be so contemptuous? And I think that's the question that you couldn't put your finger on with your kids. You don't know exactly why some of their behavior bugs you so much, but I think it's a good question to answer, because not only will it help you deal with the kids better, but I think it will help you see things about yourself that are important to see, help you in your own maturing process.
Right, yeah. And I'm not, what I was saying earlier is not that other people's oddity does not register with me. I think there, we can kind of adopt the attitude that as a Christian now, what God is calling me to do is to think everybody is just really neat, that I like everybody and I like everything about them. And that's not what I'm suggesting.
I thought that's what you were saying about me when you said you weren't bugged by anything, that you liked everything about me.
Okay, you think that.
Yeah. That's not what you're thinking, huh? You don't like everything about me?
No, there's a difference between being bugged and being in a form of denial toward other people.
Okay.
You know, where it doesn't even register that there are actually weaknesses, there are actually character flaws, there are actually limitations on what they can and can't do and that kind of thing. No, those things register with me, but we have a choice to make there. When I recognize them and when they register, do I hold them in contempt for being a finite, weak human being, or do I accept that that's true of all of us, and God is merciful and God is kind, and God was in the business of making different people with different strengths and different weaknesses, and that's really okay. I can live with that. Another thing that had a big impact on me was the trilogy written by J.R.R. Tolkien, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. The heroes of that story are creatures called hobbits. And the most remarkable thing about hobbits is they have no strengths.
They're unremarkable.
They're just utterly mediocre people all the way around. They don't have any superhuman powers. They don't have any superhuman abilities. They just keep trucking. That's all they do, is they just keep trucking.
Well, I remember reading that and even thinking they're kind of dumpy.
Yeah, really kind of dowdy, dumpy little creatures.
Kind of dorky.
Uh-huh. But they're the heroes of the story. And it was a wonderful thing that he did there, because it's an image of how you don't have to be spectacular in order to be significant. You know, in order to be a really remarkable creature as a package, you don't have to have any remarkable attributes to be remarkable as a complete package.
Well, you know, that's a really tough thing. Am I interrupting?
No, go ahead.
That's a really tough thing because our world kind of spins around remarkableness.
Excellence, yeah.
Excellence, yeah, or having some special skill or ability. I know that there's a psychologist that is pretty well known, Christian psychologist, who I think at least used to talk about you really need to develop an area of your life that's really great so that you can feel good about yourself. And I have really, really, really struggled with that, in part because in my life I wasn't remarkable in anything in particular. You know, there were people around me who were great at drama or great at music, could play the piano. I mean, I took 4 years of piano, and I can't play chopsticks. I'm just no good. I don't have any ear for it. I kind of like to sing, but I'm not a good singer. I can carry a tune and enjoy it sometimes, but I'm not particularly brilliant. I would love to be a great public speaker or a good, really great writer, or I could do athletics pretty well, but you know, when I was a kid, I won swimming races, but I got into high school and I wasn't big enough or strong enough, and I didn't up against the bigger kids. I wanted to be really good at something, and I simply was not. And that's a real struggle for a lot of people when they look around, and there's a lot of people who are talented, but there's a lot that are not remarkable. I know that with my own children. All of them are remarkable to me. I love them, and they're great. They're great. Sometimes they drive me nuts, but you know, they're great people, but they're not especially remarkable at anything.
In any particular area. And most of us in the world are that way. That's the thing that's, I mean, there are more of us than there are those people who just really stand out. I mean, even if you take something that I tend to be stronger in, there's always there are always hundreds of people that are stronger in that than I am. There's always somebody better. There's always a faster gun.
Well, you know, I think about my sister's children. She has really worked at helping them become kids that are exceptional in something and has really encouraged me to do that with my children. And I have really balked against that because I think I would be pushing them in areas that would make them what I want for my own satisfaction rather than really looking at who they are and helping them to develop that, even if they don't develop something until they're 35 that they really feel like they're strong with. And I'll explain that in a minute. But my sister's children, one of them is very good at the piano. She's very good in her studies. She's kind of this all-around, really kind of talented person, really good with kids. Her other daughter is top on the tennis team, straight A's, very exceptional. And my children are not top in the tennis team. I just watched my son at a track meet, and he really ran hard, and I just thanked God for his healthy body. But he definitely wasn't first in any of his events, and or not second or third. But he's out there working hard, and I just love watching it. But he's not the best. And I know, like your children, Jack, your kids get straight A's, and they're the best at soccer. So it's a struggle for me as a mom to see my kids being somewhat unremarkable in terms of those things that are visual to other people, and kind of holding fast to, okay, I'm not going to push them in an area that just makes me feel good, but kind of let them be who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I know the struggle I had with myself, wondering what in the world I was going to do with my life because I wasn't remarkable. And what's happened is over time I've fallen into a niche that works really well for me and I've developed. But through blood, sweat, and tears, I've developed myself as a therapist who has... I'm very invested in it. I'm very interested in it. It's become a passion for me. But it didn't come to me easily. I didn't get it easily in school, even in graduate school. I have worked my tail off to be at the place that I am now.
I can't back this up, but my theory is that we are all geniuses, if you will, at being what I am. And the problem is that we're taking measurements that are given us by society, which is a very blunt instrument. I mean, as far as society is concerned, you can excel here, 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 maybe a couple of dozen places, and if you don't fall neatly into that category, then your intelligence, your strength, the real virtues of you as a created being don't register on the social scale. But God is not looking at us as an American and as somebody in American culture or whatever culture that we live in. God is looking at us from the standpoint of the master craftsman, the creator, who made me just so, you know, made me just exactly to be this person. And I hope this is not just being too sentimental or Pollyannish or something. I really think that it's true. It's my conviction that we really are truly remarkable people with strengths that are unique to us, a combination of abilities, a combination of strengths that are unique to us, that truly do make us objectively remarkable. It's just that remarkable person that I am will not necessarily be socially recognized as such, because we have such a limited number of things that we acknowledge and value.
I think you're right. It's really, really very much of a blunt scale. You're very intelligent, or you're a very good athlete, or you're very good at the arts. And those are kind of there's probably more, but that's kind of the blunt scale.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm really challenging you today and coming down on you, so maybe I'll bug you by the end of this today, Jack. But one of the things that you said that you do with your children that I believe all of us parents do, our parents did to us, and we do it to our own children, and nothing we should be proud of, is See, I'm not just trying to pin it on you, Jack. I'm trying to make this general. But it's to try to make them in the image of what's comfortable for us or what's mm-hmm. positive to us or what we think would be successful or what we think will keep us from somehow being uncomfortable. Exactly what it is for you, we haven't put our finger on, but I'm back again saying, I think that would be a really good exercise for you, Jack. Just put in my little 2 cents there. But when I was growing up, in my home, it was very valued to be a business person, to be a person who was interested in very tangible, practical things. My dad was very, very good at that. He was very creative in terms of being able to see a problem and being able to work it out in the business world. He developed property. He was very, very good at it, very successful. And when I went to college, he said, Christine, what I want you to take is physics. I want you to take business. I want you to take economics. And I think I've said that before. In my freshman year, I really tried to take those things. I cheated. I can't remember exactly, but I know I cheated in economics and in physics. And those are the only classes that I really cheated in school because I really didn't get it. But I felt like I had to do it because that was what was open to me. I remember feeling very frustrated, and about my sophomore year of college, talking to my dad on the phone, and he was trying to ask me what I was going to do for a major, and I certainly wasn't going headed in the direction he wanted. And he said, Christine, at least don't be a psychologist or a nurse. He wasn't in any way trying to be hurtful. He just saw the world from the perspective that's very different. Mm-hmm. He had his own unique strengths.
Right.
He had a hard time seeing that I had strengths that were very different, and in fact, he didn't value. And so I've had to work against what my father wanted for me. Actually, I was trying to go along with it, and I just failed. And so I kind of went in the area of the helping professions because it just fit me. And I think that's such a disservice that not just my father or anybody's father or mother does, but all of us have the tendency to want to move our kids in the direction that we value most. And that's not just with our kids, but it's with other people. When I work with you, Jack, I want you to move in a direction that's more comfortable for me. It may not even be that I have contempt for you, because you don't, but because it's easier for me, mm-hmm. because it makes life smoother for me, because I don't have to adjust so much or compromise so much. And, you know, I realize that you never asked me what I was bugged about you, but it is hard for me that you are not like me mm-hmm. sometimes. I mean, we're so very different that sometimes people ask me how the show is going, and I'll say, this show, Christiane at Work, and I'll say, you know, I really enjoy doing it. It's a great opportunity. I like what we're being able to get out there. And sometimes Jack drives me crazy. Because yeah. of the way you think, it just isn't along the same lines as I am, and
right.
and I would think sometimes that might be an obstacle for you because I just don't go. Maybe I don't ask the kinds of questions you would like to have next.
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow your line of thought.
Right.
You certainly don't follow my line of thought, and I'm always adjusting and readjusting and thinking, man, I wish I had been able to say that. But you don't help lead me along the lines of what I think is important to
right.
say, and nor do I think I do it to you. So it takes a lot of having to be patient with this process.
Right, absolutely. And that's the stuff of human relationships, is the give and take, the not having to be in control, the not having to have it my way, letting other people have a place alongside me and let them do some steering as well.
And
that takes work. You know, it doesn't come naturally to us. But in the final analysis, if we come to recognize that the Lord of reality is God, not me, and that he's the only one with the prerogative to actually dictate how things are going to go, then I can allow him to use other people in my life to steer the direction of something as simple as a conversation or something bigger. I can allow God to be in the driver's seat and allow him to steer it as he works through other people. I just need to be gracious. I need to be not contemptuous. I need to be respectful. I need to be kind. And then that's going to dictate to what extent their input steers the direction of my life. And I think that's where we should be. I think that's the right way to be. It certainly makes relationships go a lot more smoothly.
Practically speaking, there is nothing more practical than the truth of the gospel. However, many times we wish the Bible to be more obviously applicable to our everyday struggles. We want our pastors and Bible teachers to show us how Christianity offers clear solutions to our problems. In the News and Views article, Practically Speaking, Mackenzie Study Center teacher Ron Julian argues that the teaching of the Bible is not about techniques for a happy life. Rather, the Bible continually calls us to re-examine the profound story of what God is doing in creation, a story which has many implications for our view of God, ourselves, and the world. On the surface, this may seem very theoretical and not very practical. However, the gospel is profoundly practical and life-changing, but by its very nature, it is a set of ideas. We need to be reminded of those ideas over and over again. Thus, the most practical thing a person can do is to base their choices and decisions on the foundation of truth presented to us in the Bible. Contact Mackenzie and ask for your copy of Practically Speaking by Ron Julian.
As has become our weekly routine, we would like to ask the listening audience to consider supporting us financially if you think that the content and the approach of this program is helpful to you and to other people, and therefore worthy of your support. We would be very grateful for any support that you could send our way. We have been humbled and greatly appreciative of both the support that we have received in the past several weeks, as well as the wonderful letters that we've received. It's been very encouraging to know that we are connecting with people. We are helping them with not only the content of what we're saying, but particularly, Christine, by your guiding us into the nitty-gritty of life and an honest exposure of what our own Christian lives are all about and what we can expect the Christian faith to look like in people's lives. I want to thank you for that, and it's apparent from the letters that we've received that a number of them were thankful for that as well. I think you have another letter that you could read for us.
I do. I guess in the beginning when we were asking for financial support, it was difficult for me, Jack, much more so than now, because we've been receiving more letters and hearing that people have had a positive impact on their lives. And so it makes me think, well, gosh, I really want to continue this program. I really think it's valuable for these people. And here's another of the letters. I always enjoy listening to your program, broadcasted on Friday evening. The one on April 6-17 was particularly interesting to me. You spoke about the trials and tribulations of our lives. It was so poignant and spoke so deeply to my heart. The honesty that you both share is so refreshing. The points that you made about children, our perceptions of them, their ingratitude, our expectations, all of it was so right on point. And I was especially appreciative about the way you both articulated your experiences. Thank you so much. So there's another letter of gratitude. And again, I'd like to encourage people to please write in your experiences with the program. Let us know what's going on in your lives as you listen to the program.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, would like to order other programs, or want to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, please call us at 541-485-4801. Again, that's area code 541-485-4801. You can write us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And you may also find us on the net at www.mackenziestudycenter.org. Tapes can be purchased with check or Visa card. If you desire to support the ministry of Mackenzie Study Center, your gift will be entirely tax deductible. Please mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center. Again, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. The telephone number again, 541-485-4801. Now, On behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.